Last week, we have described stepper motors as those devices whose activity is controlled by a digital device or even by a microprocessor through a suitable pulse emission into which we control basically the frequency in the emission to manage the velocity of the rotation of the motors, or the number of the pulses to control the angular position assumed by the motor itself. Let's look better at how this activity is managed. Referring to slide 97, we have a picture that depicts the circuit that is devoted to the driving of the motor. We see that in this circuit we have a couple of MOS devices, N-channel MOS devices, connected to the power supply through a couple of inductors. Those inductors are numbered with the numbers 1 and 3. The situation that we have in mind corresponds to the one that we have seen last week in slide 96, into which we have a rotor that is a wheel with suitable expansions that are permanent magnets that during the rotation pass under a group of inductors in the, let's say, simulation model that we are considering. We have drawn four inductors, 1, 2, 3, and 4, that are supplied in a suitable sequence so as to generate magnetic fields that attract or not the expansions that are polarized with magnetic fields opposed in sign with those with respect to those generated through the inductors. In other words, I mean that if an expansion is polarized as north, speaking in terms of magnetic field, the couple 1 and 2, the two inductors 1 and 2, will be supplied so as to generate a magnetic field that is polarized south. So we have four inductors, and as I said, the rule by which through which we provide power supply to them is shown in the yellow table in slide 97, into which we see that with a suitable sequence, we activate first of all the first and the second inductor, 1, 2, on, we wrote in the yellow table, while 3 and 4 are kept off. Then we activate inductors 2 and 3, then inductors 3 and 4, then inductors 1 and 4, and finally again 1 and 2. This means that the sequence of activations for the inductors is basically an iteration, periodically repeated, that after four steps will reproduce the initial sequence of commands given to the inductors. By supplying the inductors with such a sequence, the particular expansion that is under the couple 1 and 2 at the following step will be attracted by the couple 3, 2 and 3, at the further following step will be attracted by the couple 3 and 4, at the last step will be moved by the couple 1 and 4, and basically will exit from the area in the rotation covered by the four inductors. And when we will activate the couple 1 and 2 again, the considered expansion will be completely out from the attraction area managed by the four inductors, and a new expansion 1 will be located under the two inductors 1 and 2 active in such a step. This allows to perform the rotation of the motor. Clearly, we have to consider that the motor will be connected to an object whose inertia, whose internal, let's say, friction sources are not so high, because otherwise the magnetic energy that is necessary to provide to inductors, that is the magnetic fields that we have to generate, will be so high to require a very big power supply source, and also potential disturbances in the environment surrounding the motor itself. So basically the stepper motors are managed to control angular velocity and positions of typically light objects. Typically stepper motors are not used to provide big torques to a whatever process. But coming back to the way through which we generate the sequence of the commands that will activate 1, 2, 3 and 4, we look at those two MOS circuits connected to the two inductors we mentioned at the beginning of this talk. You see that the inductors that we are considering are the number 1 and the number 3, because they are alternatively active or not, considering the sequence of the steps that we have showed in the yellow table. Look at the first step. We have one and off, one on and three off. In the second step, we have one off and three on. In the third step, we have one off and three on again. In the last step, on and off. And finally, we start again a new iteration, so we have on and off. This means that a circuit like the one that is shown in the figure is very suitable for such a kind of management, because we can activate the things so as to have alternatively active one of the two MOS that we have considered. In the circuit we have a current generator that absorbs current, so this current must be provided by one of the two MOS circuits, and we see that the gates of these two MOS are connected in the right one to a suitable fixed voltage, while in the left one to a command that we call V13 that is suitably managed accordingly to the voltage value in the gate of the right MOS. I mean that if V13 is greater than the voltage in the gate of the right MOS, the left MOS will be active and the current will be provided by the MOS itself, and the inductor 1 will be active. Conversely, if V13 is negative or is lower than the voltage provided at the gate of the right MOS, the current will be absorbed by the generator coming from the MOS, right MOS active, and therefore through the inductor number 3. This means that with a, let's say, binary signal V13 that can be 1 or 0, logically speaking, I mean 5 volts or 0 volts, we can decide if the current will cross inductor 1 or inductor 3. And clearly we can manage the activation of those two inductors. Now, if we imagine that also inductors 2 and 4 are mounted into a circuit that is equal to the one that is shown in picture slide 97, we clearly understand that it is possible to manage the activation of 1 and 3 and at the same time 2 and 4 inductors. And even 2 and 4 follow the same rule as the other ones, that is alternatively active. 2 is on and 4 is off in the first step, and in the second step, then in the third and in the fourth one, 2 and is off and 4 is on. Okay, so we can control the rotation of the motors with two signals. We can call the second one V24, while the first one will be one V13. Now, looking at the logic that is necessary to be provided to manage the activation of all the inductors, we see that in the first step V13 is positive and V24 will be positive as well. Of course, when we say positive, we have in mind a situation into which V13 is greater than the voltage applied to the other MOS, to the right MOS in the picture. For example, if that voltage is the ground is zero, we understand that V13 could be, for example, 1 or 2 volts, and the things work well. In the second step, the inductor 1, I mean, becomes not active, while the inductor 2 remains active, so V13 is negative and V24 is positive. In the third step, we have that both the inductors must be not active, so we have off-off, that means that V13 and V24 are negative. In the last step, the first inductor is active, the second is not active, so V13 is positive and V24 is negative, and then we start again with another iteration. The question is now how to provide such a couple of voltages, such a couple of signals to the gates of the MOS circuits that must be managed to control the rotation. The first and the most intuitive idea is to provide them through the port of a microprocessor, and there are situations into which this is a good idea, a good method, but clearly when the velocity of the motor augments, the risk is, as several times we have said in the past, that the microprocessor will spend a not low part of its time to control the rotation, and clearly this is not the best way to use it. Instead, we can conceive a suitable digital circuit to manage the same task, while involving the microprocessor only from time to time. The solution is shown in the lower part of slide 97, into which we see that we have a couple of flip-flops named Q0 and Q1. They are connected serially, that is, one follows the previous one. And the output of the second will become the input of the previous one, But in the middle, we have a NOT gate. That is, the output of Q1 will be the next input of Q0 inverted. Clearly, the upgrade, the modification of the state of every flip-flop is synchronized with a suitable clock that must be provided with a suitable value, and this value could be set by the microprocessor. In other words, the frequency by which the signals that exit from the two flip-flops are modified can be determined by the microprocessor using one of those counters that we have described at the beginning of the course, and setting in those counters the TBV value, that is the time-based value from which the counter starts, counting suitable clock cycles as they come from an oscillator, and this will determine the period for upgrading the signals in the flip-flops, so determining the frequency of the pulses and clearly the velocity of the rotation of the motor itself. The logic that justifies such a kind of digital architecture is corresponding to the sequence of the values assumed by the two signals V13 and V24, looking again at the yellow table. In fact, if we follow the steps, we see that in the first step we have a plus plus, in the second step we have minus plus, in the third minus minus, in the fourth plus minus, and the last row of the table will repeat the first one, so we have again plus plus. Remember that plus and minus means that the signals can be considered positive or negative, or in any case greater and lower compared to the fixed voltage applied to the gate of the right MOS in the electronic circuit. That is, in the sequence of the commands that we are providing, every time the new V13 corresponds to the previous V24 signal, but inverted. Looking at, for example, at the second row, at the second step, we see that V13 is negative, while V24 is positive. Next step, we have again that V13 is negative and V24 is positive. Next step, we have that V13 is positive and V24 is negative. Last step, we have that V13 and V24, of course, in the previous step, is negative. Clearly, the architecture with the two flip-flops reflects such a kind of logic. The next V13 will be the previous step V24 inverted. So we can say that the output of the flip-flop Q1 will be the signal V24, while the output of the signal Q of the flip-flop Q0 will be the signal V13 and will be activated in the clock immediately following the clock of the previous V24 signal that is inverted before sending it to the flip-flop Q0. The logic that we have explained is related to the fact that we have considered the steps from the top to the bottom, that is, from the first to the second, to the third, to the fourth, and then to the next iteration. If we run across the table, across the steps, from bottom to the top, that is, from the last row to the first one, we will see that the logic is similar but a little bit different. In this case, v24 will be equal to the previous v13 inverted. Look at the step number 4, or we have the v24 is negative while the previous v13 was positive. Again, step number 3, v24 is negative, v13 is positive. Step number 2, v24 is positive and previous v13 is negative. Step number 1, v24 is positive while in the previous step v13 was negative. Okay, this means that we need a similar circuit where, however, the value of Q1, that is of the signal V24, will be the previous Q0 inverted. That is that the new circuit will be equal to the one that is shown in slide 97, but the two flip-flops will be inverted, will be exchanged before Q1 and then Q0. The previously described approach is called two-phase sequence, or also normal sequence, and is related to the fact that at every step in the rotation of the motor, two MOS are at the same time active. Two inductors will be supplied so as to provide a magnetic field. This is not the only possible approach. We have other two, let's say, policies typically adopted in the motors present on the market. They are shown in slide 98. The first one is called wave drive, and the second one is called half-step drive. In the wave drive, at each step, only one of the inductors is active, while all the remaining ones are not active. This will provide indeed less torque with respect to the previous approach, simply because we have less energy, we have less magnetic fields, so one instead of two. So clearly, the capability, the attraction force will be reduced, will be halved with respect to the previous policy. In the half step, instead, we have that alternatively, two MOS or only one is active. For example, in the first step, we have 1 and 4 active. In the second step, we have only the first inductor active, then 1, 2, then only 2, then 2 and 3, then only 3, and so on. This means that the final number of the steps will be twice with respect to the previous approach, and this will assure us a better accuracy in the identification of the angular position assumed, but the torque provided will be irregular and the power consumption not constant. So we can say that we have three policies that are all valid. There is not one that is better than the others, but all of them are suitable for particular conditions. If we want to have accuracy but low power consumption, and we are not so interested to torque, clearly the wave drive is the most appreciated one. If we want accuracy together with torque, but we accept to pay the price of a greater power consumption, we can apply the normal drive policy. If we accept an irregularity in the power consumption and in the torque applied, but we want to be very accurate in the angular movement, the half step is the right one. We have to correct the hypothesis on which we based our considerations by going in slide 99, where a correct and real power supply circuit for a step motor is shown. Looking at the upper part of the slide, we see in the left part that we have a rotor and we have four poles for corresponding to the inductors, but the four poles are not located into a specific part of the possible circular rotation, but they are located, let's say, talking in terms of geographical points, north, at north, at south, at east, and at west. If you look at the circuit that is shown in slide 99, but in the upper right part, you see that we have the rotor and we have two magnetic circuits, C-shaped, and featuring some solenoidal circuits wound on themselves. Every solenoid is connected to a transistor. In this case, we have also four diodes because every inductor must be discharged during the not activation phase of the transistor, but we have already talked about this issue. What is important to notice is that every transistor provides a suitable power supply to the corresponding solenoid when active. Otherwise, clearly the solenoid is not active. And the sense through which the currents will cross the solenoidal circuits will determine the polarization of the magnetic expansions of the two nucleus. In other words, you see that in the figure we have indicated in this particular situation that the upper expansion is polarized north, the lower expansion is polarized south, the west one is polarized south, and the eastern one is polarized north. This clearly will determine the rotation of the rotor that will have in turn two points polarized oppositely, that is one north and one south. And of course, on the basis of the attraction-repulsion logic between the magnetic field in the expansions and the magnetic field internal to the rotor, we will have the rotation of the rotor itself. The logic is well shown in the table presented in the lower part of the slide 99. In this slide, you see that we have the three policies, the three possible approaches that we can use: wave drive, normal or half or two-step drive mode, and half-step mode. In the wave drive mode every time we have the activation of only one transistor, so only one of the inductors will be supplied, and only one of the possible magnetic fields will be present in the nucleus, in the expansions. For example, if we activate Q1, that is the first in the row of the transistors, we will have that the upper expansion will be north, so the south pole in the rotor will be attracted, and the position assumed by the rotor, let's say, could correspond to a rotation parallel to a vertical line. If we activate Q2, this is connected to the next solenoid, and that is the solenoid, if you look in the figure, the last one in the row, and this will activate the solenoid corresponding to the eastern part of the circuit. The corresponding expansion will become north, and the south pole of the rotor will be attracted so as to assume an horizontal position. Now let's activate Q3. Q3 is the second one in the sequence of the transistor that are located in the lower part of the magnetic circuit, and we see that is connected to the lower solenoid in the first nucleus. This solenoid will manage the lower expansion, the so-called southern expansion. When active, that expansion will assume a north magnetic polarization, so attracting the southern pole in the rotor and making the rotor itself to assume like as a vertical orientation. And finally, activating the Q4 transistor, we will manage the west solenoid, let's say the west expansion of the nucleus, and will make the rotor to assume an horizontal orientation. If we use the normal drive mode, again with the same four expansions located north, south, west, and east, the considerations will be the same, but in this case not one only expansion but two expansions will be polarized, so the force with which we can move the motor will be stronger, but basically we will have always four steps. That is, the accuracy is the same as before, the torque is greater. Look at the table and see that if the transistors active are Q1 and Q2, basically we have the north and east expansions active, so the rotor will assume a position that is intermediate between them. In particular, I mean the southern pole of the rotor, so the overall orientation will correspond to a northeast orientation. If we activate transistor Q2 and Q3, the expansions polarized north will be the southeastern ones, so the orientation will be obtained accordingly to those, let's say, geographic points. If we activate Q3 and Q4, basically we are activating the south and west expansions. So the south pole of the rotor will be oriented in the middle between them and will make the rotor to assume a southwestern orientation. And finally, with the Q1 and Q4, we will have that the rotor will assume a northwestern orientation. Finally, if we drive the motor in the half-step mode, we said that at every time we have one or two transistors active. In the first step, we have Q1, so the orientation is vertical, is north-oriented. In the second step, we have Q1 and Q2 active, so applying the same logic as before, we will have a northeastern orientation. In the third step, we have Q2 active, so we have the rotor oriented towards east. In the fourth step, Q2 and Q3 are active, so we have a southeastern orientation. And in the successive four steps, we will assume the remaining positions that are south, southwestern, western, and northwestern. Clearly, the angular accuracy in this case is better. And however, at every time the magnetic force is not constant, because when you activate one transistor is different from when you activate two transistors, and the corresponding torque and power consumption will be not constant as well. In slide 100, the same configurations are shown. Simply, they are more visible than before, but the concepts are the same, and even the orientations, considering the three possible modes for managing the activation of the transistors and therefore the positions of the rotor itself. Instead, coming back to slide 98, it is necessary to say a couple of words about the possible ways through which the power supply is provided to the four inductors that characterize the motor. We have three solutions that can be found on the market, the so-called 5-wire, 6-wire, 8-wire stepper motors. But the idea is that in the left part, we have the simplest one, into which a unique single source of power is provided and shared and among the four inductors. Conversely, in the right solution, the so-called 8-wire stepper motor, we have that every inductor is equipped with its own power supply generator. The median solution shows an approach into which a couple of inductors share a power source, but not all of them will share the same source, neither each one has its own personal, let's say, generator. Where is the difference between these three proposals? The first one clearly is the cheapest one, because we have only a generator. Clearly, that power will be shared and equally distributed among the inductors, so we can't have a very big generator, and this means that the power, the current that will cross the inductors will be not so high, and the magnetic field correspondingly will be not so strong. So such a kind of solution minimizes, let's say, the power consumption, but the potential torque that such a kind of motor will produce is not very high. Conversely, if we have four separate generators, clearly we can devote to every inductor the maximum power that every generator can provide. So in this solution we can enforce the strength of the magnetic fields that every inductor will generate at the price of the presence of four generators, so we increase the power consumption. And another issue that we must take into account is that it is not easy to keep exactly the same power for all the four inductors that we are considering. That is, it is not easy, or we need a very accurate electronic control to keep the same magnetic fields generated by the four inductors, so as to have a good rotation rate of the motor without loss of steps or vibrations or irregularities. Clearly, the median solution represent a trade-off between the two possible solution: low power, low torque; high power, high torque. Finally, just to conclude, we can ask to ourselves how to perform the control of such a kind of motor, not with the digital circuit made up by two flip-flops, but straight from a microprocessor. The market proposes several solutions. One of them is proposed in slide 101. We have an interface, 20 pin, that is connected to the port of a microprocessor, and in this figure is in one side connected to a couple of steppers motor that will rotate accordingly to two axes that will be transformed in linear movements along an horizontal axis and along a vertical axis. This is a solution typically used in printers. I don't want to go too much in the details. In slide 102 we have a set of commands, because correspondingly to that kind of interface it is possible to download from internet a suitable driver with the possibility of writing those commands, managing both the policy with which the motor is controlled, the velocity and the direction of the rotation. Of course, if you want to go into the details about such things, you will find a lot of literature in the web.